that there was a misconception that many people are fellow citizens have about people in the show business. It was only a generation ago that people of my profession couldn't be buried in the churchyard. Of course, the world has improved since then. We're going to be buried now. As a matter of fact, the evenings of someone who performed that service gets a little frightened at times. Now, back in 1927, an American socialist, Norman Thomas, six times candidate for president on the Socialist Party ticket, said the American people would never vote for socialism. But he said under the name of liberalism that the American people would adopt every fragment of the socialist program. There are many ways in which our government has invaded the precincts of private citizens. Method of earning a living. Our government is in business to the extent of owning more than 19,000 businesses covering 47 different lines of activity. This amounts to a fifth of the total industrial capacity of the United States. But at the moment, I'd like to talk about another threat, because this threat is with us, and at the moment, is more imminent. One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of laws. It's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project. Most people are a little reluctant to oppose anything that suggests that medical care that they possibly can't afford. Now, the American people, if you put it to them about socialized medicine, gave them a chance to choose, would unhesitatingly vote against it. We have an example of this under the Truman administration. It was proposed that we have a compulsory health insurance program for all people in the United States. And of course, the American people unhesitatingly rejected this. So, with the American people on record as not wanting socialized medicine, Congressman Foran introduced the Foran Bill. This was the idea that all people of Social Security age should be brought under a program of compulsory health insurance. Now, this would not only be our senior citizens, this would be the dependents and those who are disabled. This would be young people if they are dependents or somewhat eligible for Social Security. Now, Congressman Foran brought the program out on that idea of just for that particular group of people. But Congressman Foran was subscribing to this foot-in-the-door philosophy because he said, if we can only break through and get our foot inside the door, then we can expand the program off the back. Walter Reuther said, it's no secret that the United Automobile Workers is officially on record as backing a program of national health insurance. And by national health insurance, he meant socialized medicine for every American. And let's see what the socialists themselves have to say about it. They say, once the Foran Bill is passed, this nation will be provided with a mechanism for socialized medicine capable of indefinite expansion in every direction until it includes the entire population. Well, we can't say we haven't been warned. Now, Congressman Foran is no longer a congressman of the United States government. He has been replaced, not in his particular assignment, but in his backing of such a bill, by Congressman King of California. It has presented the idea of a great emergency. Millions of our senior citizens are unable to provide needed medical care. But this ignores the fact that in the last decade, 127 million of our citizens, in just 10 years, have come under the protection of some form of privately owned medical and hospital insurance. Now the advocates of this bill, when you try to oppose it, challenge you on an emotional basis. They say, what would you do? Throw these poor old people out to die with no medical attention? That's ridiculous, and of course no one's advocating. As a matter of fact, in the last session of Congress, a bill was adopted known as the Kern-Mills Bill. Now, without even allowing this bill to be tried to see if it works, they have introduced this King Bill, which is really the Foran Bill. What is the Kern-Mills Bill? It is a frank recognition of the medical need or problem of the senior citizens that I've mentioned. And it is provided from the federal government money to the states and the local communities that can be used at the discretion of the state to help those people who need it. Now, what reason could the other people have for backing the bill which says we insist on compulsory health insurance for senior citizens on a basis of age alone, regardless of whether they are worth millions of dollars, whether they have an income, whether they're protected by their own insurance, whether they have savings? I think we could be excused for believing that, as ex-Congressman Foran said, this was simply an excuse to bring about what they wanted all the time, socialized medicine. James Madison, 1788, speaking to the Virginia Convention, said, "Since the general civilization of mankind, I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachment of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations." They want to attach this bill to Social Security, and they say here is a great insurance program now instituted, now working. Let's take a look at Social Security itself. Again, very few of us disagree with the original premise that there should be some form of saving that would keep destitutional and following unemployment by reason of death, disability, or old age. To this end, Social Security was adopted, but it was never intended to supplant private savings, private insurance, pension programs, and unions and industries. Now in our country, under our free enterprise system, we have seen medicine reach the greatest heights that it has in any country in the world. Today, the relationship between the patient and the doctor in this country is something to be envied. Privacy, the care that is given to a person, the right to choose a doctor, the right to go from one doctor to another. But let's also look from the other side, at the freedom the doctor loses. A doctor would be reluctant to say this. Well, like you, I'm only a patient, so I can say it on his behalf. The doctor begins to lose freedoms. It's like telling a lie from one leads to another. At first, you decide that the doctor can have so many patients, they're equally divided among the various doctors by the government. But then the doctors are equally divided geographically. So a doctor decides he wants to practice in one town, and the government has to say to him, "You can't live in that town. They already have enough doctors. You have to go someplace else." And from here, it's only a short step to dictating where he will go. This is a freedom that I wonder whether any of us have the right to take from any human being. I know how I feel if you, my fellow citizens, decided that to be an actor, I have to become a government employee and work in the national theater. Take it into your own occupation or that of your husband. All of us can see what happens once you establish the precedent that the government can determine a man's working place and his working methods, determine his employment. From here is a short step to all the rest of socialism, determining his pay. And pretty soon, your son will decide when he's in school, where he will go or what he will do for a living, and then will wait for the government to tell him where he will go to work and what he will do. In this country of ours took place the greatest revolution that has ever taken place in the world's history, the only true revolution. Every other revolution simply exchanged one set of rulers for another. But here, for the first time in all the thousands of years of man's relation to man, in a group of men and founding fathers, for the first time, established the idea that you and I have within ourselves the God-given right and ability to determine our own destiny. This freedom is built into our government with safeguards. We talk democracy today, and strangely we let democracy begin to assume the aspect of majority rule as all that is needed. Well, majority rule is a fine aspect of democracy, provided there are guarantees written in to our government concerning the rights of the individual and of the minorities. What can we do about this? Well, you and I can do a great deal. We can write to our congressmen, to our senators. We can say right now that we want no further encroachment on those individual liberties and freedoms. And at the moment, the key issue is we do not want socialized medicine. And you may think when we say write to the congressmen and the senators, this is like writing family over the television program, isn't it? In Washington today, 40,000 letters, less than 100 for congressmen, are evidence of a trend in public thinking. Representative Halleck of Indiana has said, "When the American people want something from Congress, regardless of its political complexion, they make their wants known. Congress does what the people want." So write. It's as simple as finding just the name of your congressman or your senator. Then you address your letter to that individual's name. If he's a congressman, to the House Office Building, Washington, D.C. If he's a senator, to the Senate Office Building, Washington, D.C. And if this man writes back to you and tells you that he too is for free enterprise, that we have these great services and so forth that must be performed by government, don't let him get away with it. Show that you have not been convinced. Write a letter right back and tell him that you believe in government economy and fiscal responsibility, that you know that governments don't tax